Welcome to the Anthropology in Business podcast, where you'll learn about the many ways anthropology is applied in business and why business anthropology is one of the most effective lenses for making sense of organizations and consumers. Through conversations with leading anthropologists working in advertising, marketing, consumer behavior, organizational culture, user experience, and many other roles, you'll learn firsthand what it means to do business anthropology and how the work differs from academic anthropology. We'll discuss issues like the pace and depth of research in business, our visibility and influence as practitioners, and what we can do to build our brand. We will also focus on the value and impact of our research in business so that we can help business leaders understand why they should be hiring anthropologists. I'm your host, Matt Arts, a business anthropologist specializing in design anthropology and working at the intersection of product management, user experience, and business strategy. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Anthropology and Business Podcast. I'm Matt Arts. I'm here today with Matthew J. Hill of Matthew J. Hill Consulting. Previously spent some time at University of Massachusetts Amherst, UPenn, CIFAR, ELAB. And so, Matthew, thanks for joining today. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that journey?
Sure. So I'll start quickly. Just, you know, at the undergrad level, I studied at the University of Colorado, Boulder. I studied chemistry, like many people, was probably thinking about becoming a pre-med student. But post graduating with my chemistry degree, I really had a strong interest in the liberal arts and ended up going to Boston College, doing a master's degree in philosophy, spent a little time in Germany studying philosophy, and then ended up at the University of Chicago, planning to do a doctoral program in philosophy and history of religions, and just stumbled onto an anthropology seminar that was being taught by Marshall Solins. It was the graduate introductory anthropology seminar. This was my first anthropology class, which is like this really intensive, 4-day-a-week lecture with Marshall Solins, that starts with like St. Augustine. Basically, he's sort of unraveling the entire history of like Western social sciences. Again, beginning with St. Augustine and going through Hobbes and Locke, very traditional University of Chicago. But I think it just really resonated with my interest in intellectual history and philosophy. And, you know, at that point, I was really wanting to get out of philosophy and back into the real world. And so Marshall Solins in his graduate seminar was the thing that helped me make that transition. So I ended up switching into anthropology at the University of Chicago and doing a very traditional PhD. In cultural anthropology, I ended up doing field research in Cuba, which was transitioning post-Soviet into entering into the global economy and trying to figure out how to navigate that transition. So one of the things it was doing a lot was opening up to international tourism. So I ended up doing this doctoral research project, which was actually very applied on the use of the historic cities, on the transformation of the historic city center in Havana through using kind of UNESCO branding and international heritage tourism to revitalize this this downtown that had in a sense been saved by the revolution from demolition that happened to a lot of other Latin American capitals. So they had all this really cool 18th and 19th century architecture that had been turned into tenement housing. And so there are a lot of interesting conflicts as they were trying to do this heritage tourism development and so forth. So that was really how I got into anthropology. And that was my doctoral dissertation work.
You know, you said that it was a bit applied. How did that go over, you know, at the University of Chicago?
You know, I just happened to have a committee that was very supportive of the work. It was, you know, I worked with Susan Gal. There was kind of a new cohort of people coming in who had done a lot of work on Eastern European socialism and post-socialist transition. So it really kind of fit into her area of interest. And then I worked with Saskia Sassen, who was at University of Chicago at the time and was doing a lot of work on globalization and the role that cities were playing in, driving globalization, you could say. It really fit very well with their interests. And so there was a fair amount of support for the project, you could say.
And did you understand it to be applied at that time? And was that interesting to you?
I think I was, at this point where there was a lot of skepticism about traditional anthropology. There was a lot of interest in, Foucault and power and knowledge and, post-colonial studies. And so I think there was kind of a rupture at that point at the University of Chicago with a lot of sorts of traditional anthropology that had been taught previously. You know, to me, it was just fascinating that there was this this state entity that had been for-profit entrepreneurial state agency, basically full, an entity full of contradictions that the socialist state was using to navigate this transition to a post-Soviet socialist future. So it was organizational, interestingly enough, because a lot of my work was involved in studying this organization that was facilitating this transition. And then later in my life, I ended up becoming an organizational anthropologist. But I think a lot of people doing field work today do end up studying organizations of different sorts as part of their field study, whether it's a World Bank or Laura Nader, late Nader, and these ideas about studying up. And I think a lot of people are doing much more contemporary work these days.
And so speaking of that, how did the ELAB opportunity come to be?
So ELAB came about because I returned from the field and was a starving graduate student with no way to pay for, the dissertation that I needed to spend a year or two writing up. And there just happened to be a lot of folks at the University of Chicago who were working at ELAB at that time, or at least there were a couple of folks. So that was my introduction, basically, to this different use of ethnography in the corporate world to basically try to help clients understand how people use products and services in a much deeper way than was happening with traditional things like focus groups and so forth. We spent a lot of time running around with like video cameras, doing this thing called video ethnography and doing these mailing people. This was like mailing people these disposable cameras and stuff like that, to document the ways that they use products or services and to try to identify problems, barriers, gaps, and so forth. And then to use those insights to inform design. So the work was very enjoyable. I think it was, again, at the time it was very kind of cutting edge and so forth. So, and it just was like, wow, I didn't even know this world existed. this is like early, kind of earlier days of, quote unquote, like user research or design thinking, you might say. So.
And so how did that experience then influence what would come after it?
So I just did some consulting work at ELAB, and then I moved actually into full-time employment at another firm called Doblin. It was called Doblin Group at the time. All these firms were based in Chicago. There's a guy named Larry Keeley, who's very tied into the Illinois Institute of Technology, their design program there. And, he just had this brilliant insight that, they could really use social scientists to inform design instead of design coming out of designers' heads and what they were thinking that people needed or didn't need to really kind of delve really deeply into the experience of people, again, using products and services to develop, deeper insights that really help to come up with more innovative design concepts for different kinds of products and services. So, I think those were, really, Elab actually grew out of Dublin. I think those were really, interesting ways to apply ethnography, again, that I hadn't been exposed to previously. I just was going to mention for the audience that I think there's a nice, of course, everybody talks about design thinking these days, and now we're talking about post-design thinking. I think you've talked about, the need for digital ethnography and moving beyond even design thinking. But there's a very nice piece by Tim Brown that I like that came out in HBR in 2008. And it's just called Design Thinking. And I always kind of harken back to that article. And he defines design thinking as innovation powered by direct observation of what people want and need in their lives and what they like or dislike about the way particular products are made, packaged, marketed, sold, and supported. And I think what's really nice about that discussion and just in general is this kind of emphasis on taking a holistic approach to, developing these user insights that help, develop a more holistic approach to problem solving. He gives the example of like a rural healthcare clinics, that were trying to address people that were having issues around eye care in India. He talks about all these different facets, like when they realized, people didn't have access to cheap glasses, so they started manufacturing their own lenses. They didn't have access to hospitals. So they, created these mobile clinics, and they would go out and do these, eye camps, in these different neighborhoods and so forth. So again, it's just this thinking about a problem in a much more holistic way than, a designer just thinking about, okay, how are we going to solve the problem of eye care? That user research component is really important. So I just think the holistic approach is something that really aligns with our training in anthropology, is that we think in a systems way, all of the different facets of a problem.
Certainly agree that we're a fit there. How does that translate, into the work you would then do at CIFAR?
So I think one of the things that I found challenging just about the design anthropology world, at least the way that I was doing it. And again, I think the field has just evolved so much. We were doing a lot of client work around products and services. And I think now design anthropologists are much more embedded in organizations. But one of the things that I struggled with at the time was just what I call the subordination of ethnography to design, so to speak, and designers. I felt a little bit like we were secondhand second fiddles to the designers. I didn't totally feel like the theoretical training that we had as anthropologists in the social sciences was necessarily appreciated or fully valued in the work that we were doing. There was also a lot of travel involved. There were a lot of short projects. And I felt like, again, a limitation was that there was often like a limited knowledge of the organizational context in which we actually, for the clients that we were working for. And I'm thinking of this one project that we did for this company that made barcode printers. And, we spent a lot of time like looking at issues, with these barcode printers that they were making. There were a lot of systems issues. They were focused on the printer, but there were a lot of issues about the medium and about the environment and how it connected up with logistics and software that they weren't totally thinking about. And so I think those were really interesting ideas. And then we kind of got into, okay, with the future barcode printers, we spent a lot of time with quote unquote lead users to try to think about, what were areas that they could potentially move into. And at the end of the project, we had like 50 or maybe 100 different design concepts. That's kind of what we were tasked to do in this project. And I remember sitting in this meeting with like the CEO, and we had this whole portfolio of beautiful design concepts, fully grounded in user research. And the CEO looked at us and said, okay, so which one of these do we start with first? And everybody's mouths just dropped open and nobody had a clear sense of where to begin. Like, what was the pathway? Because again, I felt like there wasn't a deep enough knowledge or understanding of the organizational context to help them really prioritize what the development process or the pipeline should look like. So again, I think those limitations have been really overcome. And I think a lot of design anthropology is much more embedded in organizational development work. I think there's a combination of those factors now. So,
And so I'd love to hear then how you see them coming together, and, you know, where has that started to come together for you?
Well, let me move on to CIFAR and maybe see if I can get back to that question. So, you know, post, you know, my design anthropology phase, you know, I finished my dissertation and ended up moving to Philadelphia with my partner, and I was looking for a new direction and just doing some networking, and I had heard about this organization, this organizational development and design firm called CIFAR, which initially had been this kind of multidisciplinary research center at the Wharton School. It was called the Center for Applied Research. And then a number of the faculty that were involved in that research center spun it off as this independent consultancy in the late 80s, and they shortened the name to CIFAR. And for me, it was just like, you know, it was like an epiphany, because there were a lot of anthropologists working there with PhDs. There were a lot of psychologists, again, with PhDs, people like really doing deep social science, and it was all focused on like organizations. And so that really resonated with me. Like organizations like are a little bit like doing field work, like when you're a graduate student or whatever, you know, very often you're doing a community study with like 3,000 to 5,000 people, and organizations you're working with are very often like 3,000 to 5,000 people. And you have much deeper relationships. Very often organizations have culture, they have power, they have hierarchy. So I really resonated, you know, with the organizational development and design work, and just really got my tail kicked, I would say, you know, especially the first year or so, just really making the transition into that work, because there's a lot of complexity, you know, to sort of working with organizations, you know, and different aspects of the types of work that you need to do to help organizations with, you know, become more effective. So there, you know, there's strategy, there's organizational design, you know, there can be process improvement issues, there can be leadership issues. So there are all of these different types of issues, challenges that organizations have, I think fundamentally because organizations are continuously undergoing processes of change, just like all of us are in one way or another, part of the human condition. But I think organizations particularly are constantly needing to adapt to changes in the marketplace, technology, competitive forces, and so forth. So, you know, there's really, I think, this strong need for organizational development, organizational effectiveness, organizational learning, and like, every organization has this need. So this is my part of my pitch as well for anthropologists to also think about the organizational development space, because it's a space that's very dominated, I think, right now by a lot of like industrial psychologists, social psychologists. And so, but I think our training as anthropologists, as people that are really good at participant observation and deep listening, really equips us to do organizational diagnosis in a very deep and effective way.
And so today with your consulting company, you're really focusing on that. So do you have, you know, a particular angle or area that you like to focus within the organizational space?
I would say that I really, I enjoy doing a lot of working with mission-driven organizations. I really enjoy working with government agencies, higher ed, health and human services, just because I think it really aligns with my values, my own training as an anthropologist, you know, wanting to see government work more effectively, wanting to, you know, have an impact, you know, for social good. A lot of the clients that I've worked with are in one way or another trying to, I would say, work to improve the human condition.
For the listeners who, you know, many come from tech these days, I think a lot of people appreciate the importance of organizational, but I've had less guests on who do overtly organizational work. So tell us, like, you know, what might an engagement look like for you?
For me, the work really begins with contracting, defining a set of problems. A nice work, and I'm showing you the title of this because we're on video here, is Peter Block's Flawless Consulting. And there are many wonderful books that talk about consulting, but Block does a really nice job about talking about the whole process of contracting and defining what the problem is. So I think that's very often the way that the work begins. Very often clients don't really have a very deep understanding of what the issues or the problems actually are. My consulting partner, who I work a lot with, and I kid very often that, you know, every complex problem has a simple solution that's wrong. And I think clients very often approach the work thinking that there is some kind of a simple solution to, again, thinking about, you know, holism, for instance, or systems thinking, going back to maybe the design anthropology work. I think that's something that's carried over in the organizational work, is to realize that organizations are really complex systems. They have structure, they have, you know, silos, they have varieties of different types of processes, you know, they have all kinds of friction points and so forth. They need to be constantly developing strategies and so forth. So I think, again, thinking about complexity is really important in terms of the work that we do. And another work that I like is a piece of work that I like is by Carl White, an industrial psychologist at the University of Michigan, who wrote about sense making. And I think that really captures a lot of the work that we do with our organizational clients, is making sense of complexity. So coming back to your question about process, I think there is this, you know, really the work begins with contracting, with defining the problem, and then with some kind of discovery work. So instead of going out and maybe looking at how people are using products and services, usually there's a series of interviews or focus groups or observations that take place around whatever the issues might be that are the context for the consulting work. So maybe there's some process issues, maybe there's some DEI issues, maybe an organization has outgrown its current design, for instance, and it's thinking that it needs a new structure. It's having to do with mergers and acquisitions. There can be a variety of factors like that. So I think typically, like, we'll start, you know, contracting phase, work on defining the problem, and then work with the client to, you know, get agreement around what the problem is. And then typically go out and do, like, in an organizational diagnosis phase, do some discovery-driven interviewing with people that represent different parts of the organization that are being impacted by the problem or the issue. Another key piece of the work is that we typically create a steering group to help guide the work. So instead of, like, again, with the design work, very often we were going out doing this work, you know, preparing these briefs, coming up with these design concepts with the design anthropology work, and then here's our design brief at the end of a project. Whereas with organizational development work, you're working pretty much hand in glove with the client, and the organization is the object of study and the thing that you're trying to transform itself. So you're really having to partner in a very deep way. You know, we often talk about, we do the work with the client as opposed to for the client. And so, again, I think that's another thing that's a little bit different, because often when you're a PhD, when you're an anthropologist, you're there, you're the lone gun, you're doing the field work. Here you're really having to work as a part of a multidisciplinary team. You have one perspective, but you have to have a lot of humility and be learning from other people's perspective. You're working with people who have a lot more knowledge about the organization and situation than you do. So in any case, you're doing this organizational work, you're going out, you're doing this diagnosis research, then you'll maybe synthesize the findings, and then working with your steering group, you'll present those findings. You're trying to create a cycle of meetings very typically. You'll discuss the findings, whether it's a process issue with the steering group, maybe hold a workshop where you start trying to reorganize the process that isn't working very well, come up with a new idealized design for a process, for instance, and maybe you involve a broader group of stakeholders in that process. And then typically, there's a series of kind of follow-up memos. Memoing is like a really important skill, I would say, in organizational development, where whether it's a steering group meeting or it's a workshop that you're conducting, you're trying to capture what are the key agreements that are made and what are the next steps in the context of those meetings. So you're trying to create like a cycle of meetings where you're trying to move the work forward through a series of like action steps. So it's very, very much like organizing internally within organizations. I think that's really key to, you know, what I call like the whole change management process. So
let's say somebody, you know, hears this, they're interested, they're in a traditional program. Where do they go to sort of, if they wanted to be on this journey themselves?
Well, first of all, I think it starts with a leader or leadership, because typically you are contracting at the C-suite level or at the executive level in an organization. You're working with a top team, and they have to be really open to collectively solving a problem. And not every organization is in that situation. There are a lot of leaders who believe you can manage in a very top-down way. And that's typically not very effective because people aren't aligned and you know, there's a lot of resistance. So I think it really starts with a top team and a leader who's willing to collaborate and drive decision-making downward and work collectively to solve organizational issues.
You know, I'm curious to know though, I guess like how should somebody like an anthropologist get started? Like whether they're even like say in a design role, but they realize there's organizational challenges, or whether they're in an academic program, what would be like good next steps for somebody to slowly be getting involved in organizational work?
I mean, so one question is, I guess people that are already in organizations doing this work and they want to maybe, they realize there's an organizational component to the work. And then I think there's opportunities, like we do a lot of partnering with HR departments in particular, because very often HR is responsible for like organizational effectiveness or organizational development. So I think if you can find like, you know, who within an organization is tasked with leadership development or change management within the organization, I think that's a really good place to start. I think if you're new to organizational development and you want to kind of get a taste of the work, I would refer people back to things like the Anthropology Career Readiness Network that Elizabeth Bridey has been developing. And one of the great things about the network is that there are a lot of great resources out there for practitioners, even people working in organizational consulting, and then the mentors willing to speak to practitioners. So I think getting out and talking to other people that are doing the work and then seeing if you can maybe get on a project, even as a contractor or even as an intern or pro bono, just to get a little bit of experience doing the work, you know, is really helpful. I think there's a lot of other great resources out there at the AAA meetings. NAPA has had an increasingly visible presence, and I think the AAA has been much more focused on practicing anthropology. So finding the folks there that are doing the practicing work, Society for Applied Anthropology. I think the work that you've been doing with the businessanthro.com and the Business Anthropology Summits are also really great ways to meet people and network. EPIC is increasingly having adding an organizational component to their meetings. So I think it's really about getting out there, meeting people, networking, and you know, trying to get involved in the work, but work by hook or by crook.
And you know, so you mentioned a few things there of which I've seen you speak at, or you know, you've published in, and so you want to maybe share a little bit about you know some of your own work in that space that might be helpful to others?
So I have been publishing recently in the Journal of Business Anthropology. I think one of the things that I've struggled with is just this kind of Manichean split between being an academic on the one hand versus being a practitioner on the other hand. And journals like the Journal of Business Anthropology have allowed me to reintegrate my divided self and to realize that the work that I'm doing as an organizational consultant can also have, like, you know, an academic component to it. So I think of myself more as like a pracademic these days. And so I have published recently, people go into my LinkedIn site. I have some of the articles that I published there recently in the Journal of Business Anthropology. One recent piece was on entrepreneurship or cooperative entrepreneurship, growing out of some work that I've been doing in the credit union space around digital transformation issues. And then another article built on some of the work that Mario Musa, Derek Newberry, and Greg Urban have done in that this wonderful book called The Culture Puzzle, where they really talk about organizational culture and the forces that define it in an organizational setting in some very helpful ways. So so that piece came out in the fall of 22. And then I also, during my academic time at UMass Amherst, I did some consulting work for the National Park Service with tribal nations. It was really about how to improve collaboration between national parks and tribal partners on federal lands. And so growing out of that work, I have a co-edited volume with two other colleagues coming out with the Oklahoma University Press, just actually published this month, and it's called National Parks, Native Sovereignty, Experiments in Collaboration.
Yeah, well, that certainly sounds interesting. And so you mentioned LinkedIn already, but if anybody, aside from that, if anybody wanted to look you up, anything else, corporate website, anything you want to share?
Sure. You can find me if you just Google me, mjhill.consulting. That'll bring up my website, mjhill.consulting, or my LinkedIn profile is just Matthew J. Hill, PhD, LinkedIn. Just Google Matthew J. Hill, PhD, LinkedIn. And I really would appreciate it if folks would reach out and connect with me on LinkedIn, just because I so much appreciate the work that we're all trying to do in this space. And I think that the way in which we can learn from one another and help each other in the work is incredibly important. So I very much appreciate you, Matt, and this podcast, because I think, again, you've helped, you know, get the voices out there of so many of us who are doing this work. So really appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for that. And appreciate you taking the time to come on. So, Matthew, it was a pleasure speaking with you. I look forward to sharing the episode. And so thanks again.
Thank you for listening to the Anthropology in Business podcast. To learn everything you need to break into business anthropology and why business anthropology is one of the best lenses for contributing to business success, visit my website at mattarts.me, where I cover many topics related to business anthropology and beyond. There you will find all the podcast episodes, blogs, and news. Please like, share, and subscribe. See you next time.